Received wisdom states that suicide terrorists are rational political operatives, while suicidal rampage shooters in schools are merely mentally disturbed loners. But are these two categories of criminal really that different? Once again, I had an opportunity to speak with criminology professor Adam Lankford from the University of Alabama. He's been studying the relationships between depression and terrorism. I began by asking him to make a connection between what might initially appear to be two very differently motivated kinds of killer.
The thing that really stands out, the underlying connection, is that in most of these cases, they're motivated to carry out acts of murder, suicide. And what really stands out beyond that is that it's murder, suicide against victims who are strangers. They're essentially innocent civilians. Even though these people often have specific anger against people they feel have done them wrong, they're lashing out against people who haven't done anything specifically against them. And they're doing it in a planned, premeditated way. They're claiming to be victims, claiming to have an ideology motivating them. Underneath it all, it's really murder, suicide, desire to kill, and be killed.
You describe these high school killers as non-ideological terrorists. Can you expand on that?
In a large sense, what they're doing is terrorizing the community just as much or more than some other things we consider terrorist attacks. But when I say non-ideological, the interesting thing is that my research suggests that suicide terrorists almost could be considered non-ideological in a sense as well. But the difference is that school shooters are less likely to claim to be motivated for a political cause or a religious cause than suicide terrorists. But underneath it all, really ideology takes a back seat in terms of these people's motives to personal problems and personal pain, which really is what differentiates them from other people who have similar ideologies but don't do such horrible things.
One obvious similarity is that killers of both kinds usually claim to be fighting for some kind of cause, such as fighting against the system, whatever that may be, which seems to be not that different to fighting against colonial imperialism. To what extent do these killers identify with causes?
Yeah, I would say not that much. For instance, in the case of school shooters and other rampage shooters, they have sometimes claimed to have a cause, like they're trying to spark anti-government revolution, or there was even an attacker who said he was trying to put down feminism, and other attackers, the Columbine killer, Eric Harris, he wore a shirt that said natural selection on it, which kind of has some ties to ideology related to eugenics and stuff like that. So, you know, again, the cause is not primarily what's leading them to do this. They kind of latch on to a cause because they want to seem more important and more connected than they really are, as if they're part of a broad movement. And sometimes in their suicide notes or martyrdom videos, you see that same kind of thing where they talk with the term we, referring to them and their fictitious or imaginary supporters.
It sort of reminds me of some of the excuses that killers often provide, such as Charles Manson's Helter Skelter, which, however hard you try to analyze it, ends up meaning absolutely nothing. It seems to be just an excuse to go and do what he wanted to do.
Sure. I think that's a good connection. But the odd thing is that in the case of Charles Manson or someone like that, we don't take what he says seriously in terms of his rhetoric. We assume that, well, that's just kind of the ravings of a guy who has much deeper problems. In the case of suicide terrorists, for 10, 20, 30 years, we've taken their rhetoric seriously because they're actually kind of spouting the same kind of stuff as a real organization. But in their cases, you know, really they're just kind of doing the same thing. They're trying to give a reason that makes them seem more credible than they are.
Given the relative ease with which firearms can be obtained in most of America, compared to the rest of the world anyway, it's hardly surprising that suicidal people find a use for these weapons. But usually these are used as weapons of suicide. What is it that turns a small minority of suicidal people into these rampage killers?
I think what really stands out is that there are all these causes that we know of suicide, depression, hopelessness, the inability to deal with a psychological crisis, failed coping mechanisms. But in the case of these rampage killers, they are not only hurting deeply inside, but they're blaming that pain on people who are outside. They're blaming their suffering on victimization and on others who they believe have been kind of bullying them, persecuting them, oppressing them. In the case of school shooters and rampage shooters, they're usually blaming it on, you know, other students, or if they have a job, their boss at work, things like that, sometimes their parents. And in the case of suicide terrorists, they're normally blaming it on Western infidels or Zionists or the government or something like that. But in all of these cases, they're trying to lash back at people who essentially they're blaming for everything that's gone on wrong in their lives, even when it's not purely rational. So sometimes you'll have, for instance, female suicide terrorists who enter in a relationship with a man and they're not married and they get pregnant, and it's a terrible sense of shame, and then you see them all of a sudden lashing out at the government. Well, obviously it's not the government that led to this kind of illicit affair and unwanted pregnancy, but they come to kind of have this distorted view where everything that's wrong is someone else's fault.
When the media talks about school killers, we tend to encounter either the lone outsider narrative, or else these killers are described in almost inhuman terms, almost as if they are so evil they belong to some kind of predatory non-human species, when actually what we're dealing with here is somebody who may have been suffering a very extreme form of suicidal depression. What effect does this simplistic media narrative have on potential killers?
Well, what I would emphasize is the effect that it has on kind of all of us, you know, us walking around and thinking that we can identify these attackers because of these kind of outrageous overgeneralizations and oversimplifications. So there's a lot of people out there who assume that, well, if I see this guy and he's not, you know, walking around with cross-eyed and he's not looking crazy and he's not drooling, that means he must be okay, that he's not a real threat. What that leads to is them to miss critical warning signs or to ignore threats that people who seem normal or relatively normal make. So there are a lot of cases, the Virginia Tech shooter, the Columbine shooters, they submitted grade-of writing assignments to their teachers where they talked about carrying out murder-suicide attacks, and their teachers basically said, that's just a hypothetical, that's just being them creative, because they weren't acting like aliens, essentially. And there's a U.S. Secret Service study which shows that in actually 81% of school shooting attacks, the attacker told someone what he or she intended to do. So when we dismiss them as too crazy or too alien to what we're used to or accustomed to, that can lead us to miss the warning signs and not take it seriously. We really should be able to know, kind of in terms of suicidal people and people who are suffering, that sometimes the problems are subtle, and if we are aware of subtle things around us, we should be able to report them and get these people help.
Adam's new book, The Myth of Martyrdom, was released last month. You can find links to the book and Adam Lankford's research via our show notes on poddelusion.co.uk. This is Salim Fadli for The Pod Delusion.